Hello, this is World Business Report from the BBC World Service, where we bring you the latest in money, marketing, manufacturing, and yes, much, much more. Please review us, rate us, share us wherever you can. BBC podcasts are supported by advertising.
People Fixing the World is the podcast looking for solutions to the problems we face today.
It could potentially ease the suffering of millions.
We have a solution. Let's do it.
People Fixing the World from the BBC World Service.
Hello and welcome to World Business Report here from the BBC World Service. I'm Rahul Tandon. Plenty coming up. As always, President Biden says he wants more tariffs on Chinese steel.
The domestic supply in China is greater than the domestic demand, the administration is saying that it gets dumped on the world market, and that stifles competition.
And we're going to look at the issue of betting in sport. But we are going to start the program by talking about a company that we probably talk about more than any other at the moment. We're looking once again at the safety record of Boeing, the world's second biggest manufacturer of aeroplanes, because it has once again been under fierce scrutiny in Washington. The company is in the spotlight after a 737 MAX 9 experienced a mid-air panel blowout in January. Well, a Senate hearing has been listening to evidence from a Boeing whistleblower. Here with more details is our North of America business correspondent, Michelle Fleury.
This is very much about Boeing's safety culture being under the spotlight after a number of incidents, including most recently the Alaska Airlines plane where a kind of door flew off the side. And today we heard from whistleblowers coming forward. And it wasn't just one. There were several of them, which made it all the more powerful, giving their account.
Michelle, they're talking about those whistleblowers who appeared in Congress. Well, let's hear from one of them. Sam Salapour is an engineer, and he made this claim about the 787 Dreamliner.
I have analyzed Boeing's own data to conclude that the company is taking manufacturing shortcuts on the 787 program that may significantly reduce the airplane safety and the life cycle. Since 2013, there have been serious issues on the 787 program, not properly closing thousands of gaps in its assembly of the fuselage on major joints. Effectively, they are putting out defective airplanes.
A strong statement there. Mr. Salapour also told the hearing how he had been treated after raising his concerns.
I literally saw people jumping on the pieces of the airplane to get them to align. I call it the Tarzan effect, among other improper methods. Again, I raised concerns internally. I was sidelined. I was told to shut up. I received physical threats. My boss said, I would have killed someone who said what you said in a meeting.
In a statement, Boeing defended the plane, saying the fleet had safely transported more than 850 million passengers, but very strong accusations there and lots more challenges faced the company. So what could the hearings mean for it? Here's Michelle again.
Boeing is an American industrial icon, and its reputation right now is severely damaged. What we're seeing is lawmakers essentially doing their jobs, holding them to account, and this could pose risk to defense contracts down the line and lead to more stringent government oversight.
So, a lot to digest. Let's bring in Barry Valentine, a former senior official with the Federal Aviation Authority. Barry, thank you so much for joining us. Can I just start just listening to that whistleblower myself? Somebody who's been part of the airline industry, when you hear statements like that, what goes through your mind?
Thank you for inviting me on. I did have an opportunity to actually watch some of the hearing today, including that gentleman's testimony. You know, I don't have the knowledge or skill to be able to comment on his particular claims. I am an engineer by training, but not to that degree and so forth. So, but clearly based on what was said today, you know, Boeing has ahead of itself the task of convincing both the traveling public and the federal regulators that whatever issues may have existed in the past with its safety culture that need to be addressed in a way that will convince the public that they're headed back in the right direction.
Okay, stay with us. I want to bring in Susan Schmidt now, regular voice on the program. Susan, trying to convince the markets first, either Boeing's back on track. That's a big job, isn't it? And it's not one they've been able to do if you look at what's been happening to their share price.
That's right. Now, interestingly, we did have some Boeing-related news today. United Airlines came out and talked about how business is going for them. There obviously are concerns on airlines where this Boeing equipment is being deployed. United Airlines was up almost 18% today as a share price because they said that they're going to be able to overcome this, and they feel like the fleet is still prepared to handle the capacity needs that they have. So we're dealing with a lot of different cross currents here. Investors are very skeptical on what's going to happen with Boeing. They want some resolution here. And I think we're seeing these headlines that obviously cause distress. It's going to be a long road for Boeing to rebuild confidence from the investment community and get them interested in those shares again.
I suppose, Barry, one of the pros for Boeing at the moment is really when we look at aircraft manufacturing, it is Boeing and Airbus, isn't it? There's not really many other big players in the market. So people who want to buy planes, they don't really have anywhere else to go.
In terms of large aircraft, those are literally the only two on the planet, or at least certainly in the Western world, to provide airplanes. So that's certainly a concern. I would note that one of the things we don't talk about is the sheer magnitude of the Boeing fleet. And they've made over 12,000 Boeing 737s, and interestingly, one out of every four airplanes in the global airline fleet is a Boeing 737. And incidentally, that airplane's been in airline fleets for over 50 years. So, and it historically, that particular airplane has had a sterling safety record, and thus far, the 787 has been performing well. So, I always like to mention that there is a denominator in terms of sheer numbers and all of this to look at when evaluating safety and when evaluating the market for airline transportation.
Susan, you've been looking at companies and the markets for a fairly long period of time. Have we seen in the past companies going through the sort of turmoil that Boeing has been going through and then be able to rebuild themselves quite easily?
You know, we have seen this, whether it's a drug company, a big pharma, another consumer products company. We do see companies that have serious mishaps with their communication, with their product positioning, with their product performance. And obviously, that is what Boeing is going through on all fronts right now. But we have seen these companies be able to get through it and get to the other side. When you're a big organization that's run profitably and can correct yourself, the market does give you a chance.
Susan, thank you for joining us on the program. Barry, you said before, you come from an engineering background. A lot of people look at the problems that Boeing are facing at the moment and say that is one of the problems, that the management moved away from focusing on the engineering too much. Do you see that as the reason why the company is in so much trouble at the moment?
I think that's certainly a part of it. There's been a general consensus, I think, in the aviation community over the last couple of decades that with Boeing's acquisition of McDonnell Douglas some years back and with change of management at the top and so forth, that there may well have been a greater focus on the economics of aircraft production and possibly less so on what all of that does to the safety side of the equation. Again, you have to look at, as I say, the denominators, how many thousands of airplanes are out flying, how many millions of flights do they make over that period of time, and how many events have occurred of interest. So you got to, put it on that scale, yeah. which for people who have lost someone in an airplane accident, that's not very comforting. Unfortunately, I being an engineer, I looked at the numbers and the statistics and making, my decisions about what level of safety exists. But again, there is within the community and has been some concern for some time that, as people said, that the bean counters kind of took over from the engineers. So, whether you share that narrative or not is depends on your view of all of this. But nonetheless, as I said at the beginning, Boeing's job now is certainly going to be, convincing, obviously the traveling public, but also the regulators that they're back on track in terms of having the appropriate safety management system and safety culture as they go forward.
Yeah. And you know what they need to do to convince the regulators, because you've been with the regulators, haven't you? You had senior positions with the regulators. So what does Boeing have to do?
Well, they've already, at least according to Boeing, started to do the things they have to do, and that is that they are hiring and bringing in more personnel in positions that would involve safety oversight, you know, greater inspections of the products. You know, manufacturers like Boeing, I mean, they assemble airplanes. They don't make a lot of what goes in it. They don't make the engines. They don't make the wheels and the tires. They don't make the instruments. They really assemble things. So part of the job is to make sure that those products they get from other sources have been produced in a way that assures safety, and then from their own perspective that they do the assembly properly as well. But I think, as I understand it, they are bringing in more people. The FAA has pointed out to them that these are the areas you need to work on and focus on. So I think you'll see that happening as time goes forward.
Thank you so much for joining us on the program and giving us your thoughts. It was one of those days where there were two big economic stories. To be fair, you know, one could have been the lead on the program. We decided to go with Boeing, but there was another big event that took place because President Biden has called for tariffs on Chinese steel and aluminium to be tripled. He was speaking to members of the United Steelworkers Union in Pennsylvania.
For too long, the Chinese government has poured state money into Chinese steel companies, pushing them to make so much steel as much as possible, subsidized by the Chinese government. Because Chinese steel companies produce a lot more steel than China needs, it ends up dumping extra steel into the global markets at unfairly low prices. And the prices are unfairly low because China's steel companies don't need to worry about making a profit because the Chinese government has subsidized them so heavily. They're not competing. They're cheating. They're cheating. And we've seen the damage here in America.
Let's get more on President Biden's comments from our very own Erin Delmore, who's been following the story.
Let's look at the nuts and bolts here, because the current China tariff rate on steel and aluminum imports is 7.5%. And what President Biden is proposing means that could go up to 22.5%. Obviously, a considerable jump, triple. Now, this is part of a wider effort by the Biden administration to be what they would call tough on China on trade. And lately, we've been hearing this argument centering on clean energy exports. The White House says that China's flooding the market with cheap, clean energy exports, things like solar panels and electric vehicles. They're cheap because the White House says they're subsidized by Beijing. And then while the domestic supply in China is greater than the domestic demand, the administration is saying that it gets dumped on the world market and that stifles competition. That's the argument here. We heard it very recently from Janet Yellen, the Treasury Secretary in China earlier this month. And it's a similar case with steel.
We have also seen, haven't we, President Trump, who is standing for the Republican Party as their nominee, proposing even bigger tariffs. So is this politics, or are we actually going to see these things followed through?
Well, you know, in the case of the Trump administration, we did see this followed through, famously. And that actually led to some tensions with China and what threatened to become kind of a tit-for-tat trade war. So, you know, it's not something that we haven't covered and that we haven't seen kind of shaken up over the last couple of years. But what's happening here? I mean, sure, we have the actual math and the numbers and the proposed tariffs. We also have a strong political angle where when you look at broad polling across the U.S. electorate, being tough on China when it comes to trade especially is broadly popular with Republicans and Democrats. So it's really a way for candidates to pick up voters and to become a little more popular. And in President Biden's case, because we're zooming in on his new suggestion now, it could be a way for him to get Republican votes or independent votes or swing state votes. Mm. That's why he was in Pennsylvania talking about this, because that's a big steel and aluminum producing state.
That is interesting, isn't it? And we've seen Donald Trump talking about putting 60% tariffs on products coming in from China. But is steel a big import? Is there a lot of Chinese steel coming into the U.S.?
There's actually not. And that's part of what's interesting here as well. You know, just to get into the facts and figures here, over the last year, the U.S. imported about $6.1 billion in steel products. And Rahul, you would probably not believe how much, what percentage of those imports came from China. It's just 3%. And so there are already some trade barriers here. But, you know, we're seeing low single-digit numbers. I mean, last year it was just around 2%. And that doesn't make it America's biggest source of foreign steel, right? That makes China America's seventh biggest source of foreign steel. And so, no, actually, it's not a huge percentage.
Interesting, as always, to get Erin's views on President Biden's comments there. Let's bring in Lisa Goldenberg. She's the CEO of Delaware Steel Company, which is based in Pennsylvania. Thank you so much for joining us on the program, Lisa.
A pleasure to be here. Thank you.
Tell me, what did you make of the president's comments calling for these higher tariffs on Chinese steel and aluminium? You're somebody who's involved in the industry. What did you make of that?
Well, I think that it's based on what was just said a moment ago from pretty much everyone on your show. It's some of all of the above. I think that it's political posturing, but it has some teeth to it. Although the import numbers makes China our seventh largest importer, the fact is that a lot of the what we call substrate, the base metal, is coming in through other countries as then produced. China does subsidize their market. They subsidize it by both giving money to the producer itself, as well as in the way they handle their fluctuating subsidized currency. So I think that there's a lot of base to it. I guess the question on the ground is, how does it affect me, the consumer, my company? I think it's a very strong statement for Pennsylvania workers. Let's remember that Pennsylvania will be an incredibly important state for any candidate in the upcoming election. And although a lot of steel itself is not produced in Pennsylvania, aluminum, yes, but it's a very strong union state. And it says, I'm kind of with the worker. We have 25% tariffs right now on many of the EU countries. So it's not unheard of. And there is a higher than 7% tariff from China. It's a little bit more complicated.
Yeah. Where do you stand? Do you think President Biden's right on his tariff of, you know, tripling it to around 25% there? Or do you think President Trump, if he was to become president again, is right with 60%?
Well, I think that we're not going to go to 60%. I think that's silly, frankly, and would be part of a larger trade dynamic as what happened last time. Tripling it at 25% is also a misnomer. It's not going to be that dramatic because of other tariffs that are already in place. So it's going to be sort of like a little cherry on top at the end of what the numbers really are going to be. And the fact is, it does help the U.S. market. We do not subsidize our currency or our manufacturing.
Should you? Because there are a lot of people now saying, and we've seen President Biden, haven't we? He wants to subsidize the green economy. Do you think that more countries should follow China's path and actually help to subsidize their manufacturing industry?
No, I don't think that manipulating your currency is a way to stay competitive in the world.
Well, there's manipulating currency and then subsidizing industries, aren't there? They're two slightly different things.
Yeah, and there's nuance to both, right? And if we want to subsidize green energy because we need to proceed forward and, you know, get free solar panels to the consumer on one level, or give giant tax incentives to taking over dirty sites to steel manufacturers, helping them clean that and tax advantage, then maybe in a certain way, we already are offering some level of subsidy. We just call it something else. So there, of course, it's nuanced. The steel industry is strong. It's doing well. I think that we must keep in the back of our mind, this is an election cycle, so it plays very well. Here we are talking about it.
We are.
And I would support Biden's decision wholeheartedly, and I would not support 60% of anything to anyone because I believe in a world economy. That being said, I also think it's a little bit of a heads up regarding Taiwan, and it's a way of using industry to sort of say, "Hey, look to the Chinese. We're watching you carefully." It's a little stand back kind of a strategy, and it's multi-pronged, if you will. It has to do with Pennsylvania voters. It has to do with the steel economy. It has to do a little bit of a shout out to China.
Yeah, it does. And we saw Secretary Yellen saying that to the Chinese, didn't we, recently when she was in China. Can I talk to you about the steel economy in the US? Because it's a very emotive issue, steel, I think, for many countries, isn't it? And do you think, you know, that we are a little bit more emotive about steel than we might be about other products because it's seen as so crucial and central to manufacturing?
I think it's crucial and central. I think it's also big and sexy, if you will. It's the equivalent of talking about milk and eggs when you talk about your basic consumer. Steel is sort of the core of industry. It's your largest facilities, and it makes big stuff, if you will. Everything we do in our lives is steel. I could walk through anyone's home, office, supermarket, and point to steel all over the place. We just don't even appreciate it. It's everywhere, and it's the core of kind of how we function in industrial countries.
It is. We've only got about 40 seconds left. But tell me, in Pennsylvania, how have you seen the steel industry change over the last decade or so?
Well, we manufacture less steel in Pennsylvania than we did 30 years ago. However, on the Pennsylvania-Ohio border, older mills are being repurposed and starting to open up again. And with new technology, although the investment dollars is higher, the investment in terms of the scope of the land is better and will be greener. So there's also a lot of consolidation happening. I mean, it's part of a larger conversation. Steel is very strong, and manufacturing is strong in the United States, particularly over the last 4 years. And we have sort of stabilized the trade war problem.
Lisa, I could talk to you for a lot longer. It has been fascinating to have you on the program. Look forward to speaking to you again. You're with World Business Report here on the BBC World Service. Since 2018, a massive growth industry in the US has been sports betting. It's now legal in 38 states and the District of Columbia. Revenue from sports betting, legal ones, reached $10.9 billion in 2023. But one set of people excluded from betting are the players, and there's serious sanctions if they're caught doing so. On Wednesday, Jontay Porter, a basketball player for the Toronto Raptors who play in the US-based NBA, was given a lifetime ban by the NBA for breaching betting rules. I've been talking about it with Philip Drost, who's senior writer for CBC Radio in Toronto and the host of the Canada Court basketball podcast.
Jontay Porter, who actually earlier in the season had been a pretty good news story for the Raptors, he kind of came in when there were a few injuries on the team, and he came from the team's developmental league, and he was playing pretty good. He was filling in, and the team seemed to like what he was doing, and the fans appreciated it too. But then obviously news came out that he had been involved in sports betting, so he was immediately not allowed to play, and the NBA investigated it. And obviously those investigations have come out today, and not good news for him. According to the NBA's investigation, he placed a number of bets on the NBA himself, as well as gave confidential tips about his health to people he knew were sports bettors.
According to what we know, it seems that he bet around $54,000 in a series of bets, made a profit of almost $22,000 from those bets. I wonder, sports big money now, isn't it? It's also becoming a big industry for gambling. Is there a lot more attention on this sort of behavior, do you think, now than there was a few years ago?
Absolutely. I mean, when you look at the NBA now, there was a recent player, Rudy Gobert, who got fined for making a bit of a money sign at the ref, saying that the ref was rigging the game, and he got fined for that. It's definitely, with the legalization of sports betting here in North America, it's being advertised everywhere. It's on everybody's mind. So a lot of people are kind of saying it was only a matter of time before something like this came out. Now, one of the benefits of the fact that it was legalized is because it was through an online legalized sports betting website, they were able to kind of see this random player for the Toronto Raptors, who was relatively not so well known, people are making big money off his bets. So that was able to raise a big flag, at least.
Well, that is an interesting point, isn't it? About how, if there is a huge amount of money being gambled on games, and also if there is information that's being passed along, how you track it. They managed to do it in this case, but it can't be easy, can it?
It absolutely can't be easy, and that is why I think you're seeing the reaction from the NBA that you're seeing today, because they have to show players that this is unacceptable, because you can't have fans starting to call into question the legitimacy of your league. If that happens in any sport, you're in serious trouble. If reasonable thinking people are starting to have some questions about the legitimacy of your sport and the games that are played, because the magic of sport is that you don't know what's going to happen. So if that's all of a sudden called into question, you've got some problems.
What about Jonte Porter here? A life ban? Could he challenge that?
He could challenge it, but I think to the point I just made where the NBA really wants to be seen as being hard on this, I would be surprised if anything came from it. I mean, it'd be one thing if it was, you know, a one example. Maybe he told one person, hey, you know, I'm gonna be actually in this game early, make a bet on me. But where they have multiple instances of him breaking the NBA rules, I mean, it's got rules that you can't bet on games if you're a player. So I would be a little surprised if he was able to overturn that.
I was intrigued when you were talking about the growth of betting in North America. Do you hear a lot more people talking about gambling on games now? Are we seeing that industry just growing exponentially, particularly when it comes to sports betting?
Oh, absolutely. You hear it from, you're at a game and you hear fans talking about it. Multiple players have talked in the NBA this season about how the biggest comment that they're getting isn't fans who are upset that, you know, player Y played bad. They're saying, "Oh, you ruined my bet. Why didn't you play better? Why didn't you play worse?" So it's becoming, in some ways, in some spots, even bigger than people who are watching the game as fans. It's more and more you're seeing people who are there just for the betting aspect of it. And that's definitely seen a huge increase, especially this year.
We will be also looking at some other stories in our programs coming up in terms of business matters, which will be with us in a couple of hours' time. The U.S. reimposing sanctions on Venezuela is one area that we will be looking at. But that is it for this edition. World Business Report.
Was ist noch besser als ein guter Plan? Die Möglichkeit, ihn zu ändern. Mit integrierter KI bietet Workday kontinuierliche Innovationen, die Ihnen helfen, agil zu bleiben, egal was passiert. Workday, the finance and HR system for a changing world.
You've heard of Charlie Chaplin, right?
Well, Charlie Chaplin was my grandfather. And there was a time when he was the biggest star in all the world. But something happened, not just to him, but to hundreds of artists in Hollywood. They were forced to leave, forced out.
All episodes of Hollywood Exiles from the BBC World Service and CBC are available now. Search for Hollywood Exiles wherever you get your podcasts.
You've heard of Charlie Chaplin, right?
Well, Charlie Chaplin was my grandfather, and there was a time when he was the biggest star in all the world. But something happened, not just to him, but to hundreds of artists in Hollywood. They were forced to leave, forced out.
All episodes of Hollywood Exiles from the BBC World Service and CBC are available now. Search for Hollywood Exiles wherever you get your podcasts.